Ball hit deep in the left center field. Wise back. Makes the catch!
What a play! Dwayne
Wise makes the catch! What a play by Wise! Mercy!
This is the Shoeless Goat Podcast.
Brent Brown drops the ball! He drops the ball! 3 runs will score!
You gotta be peeping me! What in the hell are you doing?
Hello and welcome back to the Shoeless Go Podcast All-Star Week Edition. We're a Cubs, White Sox, and MLB podcast. I'm your host, Nick. I'm joined again by the man who is back, the mayor of Section 509, Patrick Vogt. Pat, how does it feel to be a White Sox fan these days?
You know what? It's good. Not just because they took a local product in the draft, but also because I feel like I probably was a little bit premature with that 25% playoff odds prediction I did on last week's show. Maybe a little bit doom and gloom there, but I do have to say, like, how when the first two games of the week were done and the Sox were 0-2 on the week against Cleveland, it was looking like it was going to be bad. Tony was intentionally walking people not on the first pitch again. And you had Ozzie calling him Ricky Renteria with credentials in the postgame show. I was like, this is it. Like, it's about to go off the rails. And in true White Sox fashion, they did the opposite of what I thought was going to happen. So it's been a week.
You know, I thought that you were going to be in that 40% range. Is that fair to say where you're at now? Are you all the way all in back in the 70s?
55.
Really?
The glass is a little over half full.
Oh, my.
I think so. And yeah, that is mathematically based on how this week went. Definitely not emotional.
Yeah, no, strictly numbers.
Numbers guy.
The AL Central has kept them in it more than anything. Much like the wind was the MVP of my wiffle ball perfect game, the division strength is right now the MVP of the White Sox season.
Every Batman needs their Joker.
That's
right. Something like that.
I think that's something how it goes.
Close enough.
But in any case, Cubs, not so good. We'll do Cubs and White Sox. We're going to talk MLB and some interesting home run derby stuff that's going on, as well as a throwback to a favorite All-Star weekend. But we're going to start the way we always start with a week recap. We should just call it the week cap, right? The week recap.
Looking up trademarks on that now.
Yeah, please do. We'll get the legal team involved. But we'll start with the
that's
Cubs. Shit, it is. don't say that too loud. But in any case, we're going to start with the Cubs because it was pretty awful. The only good news that came from the Cubs is they avoided their second 10-game losing streak of the season. And they did that by winning on Sunday and losing every other game. So quick score recap. Monday against Baltimore was a 4-2 loss. Wednesday was a 7-1 loss. I think that means they got swept twice by Baltimore in two-game series, if I'm not mistaken. But hey, the Baltimore Orioles are probably one of the hottest teams in baseball besides the Seattle Mariners. So I guess that, you know, a team like Baltimore should be beating a team like the Cubs, and that really is upsetting to say out loud. But in any case, the Mets came to town. It didn't get any better than that. This could have been one of the games that I was announcing, but I chose against it in favor of the Cardinals. So Thursday was an 8-0 loss at the hands of the Mets. Then we had a couple of games. I'm getting my scores wrong, but basically Friday, it was a 2-1 loss, but Friday was rained out. So technically it was Saturday's game. In the morning was a 2-1 loss that Mr. and Mrs. Bovard attended. And then Saturday in the second game of the doubleheader was a 4-3 loss. Both of those games went into extras and both lost in heartbreaking fashion. I know the Cubs had the bases loaded Saturday night with one out in the bottom of the 10th and hit into a double play to end the game. So finding really fun ways to lose by one run and finally finding a way to win by one run. The Cubs win 3-2 on Sunday, avoiding the 10-game losing streak, only losing 9 in a row. Still putting them on pace for 61.5 wins on the season. Not what we were expecting. It only will get worse if the Cubs trade away players, which they certainly will. But hey, maybe they trade away players to get Juan Soto. You know, let's build for the future here. What do you think, Pat?
Oh boy. I don't want to know what it would take for a team to get Juan Soto where the team is still competitive, but I don't know. It's a little bit more fun on my side of town, but Yeah, I think, you know, I think for me, the highlight of the week for the Cubs was the whole Max Scherzer, Ian Happ thing on Saturday night. That maybe the pitching ninja-esque waves on Twitter with Max yelling about something or another. Happ getting ejected. It was interesting couple sequences there.
I really like the fact that David Ross was being interviewed when the ejection happened.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And he chucked the headphones and ran out. Like, let's prioritize what's really going on. I think the in-game manager interviews are moronic. I actually hate them. I think any way to end them quicker is better, if you ask me. Especially if Tony. Yeah, especially if Tony's on the mic. Then you know.
Just give Liam Hendricks the headset instead.
I feel like I've seen it a couple times where the manager has either refused. This seems like a Mike Schilt move. Or basically says, I don't have time for this right now.
I want to say one game last year, the Sox had Ethan Katz do one of those that was probably definitely supposed to be the manager, but Tony was like, I don't want to do this.
It was, or like
the team said, we don't want Tony to do this.
Yeah, I think the PR team was probably more involved in that decision making for sure. But it always was like when the Blackhawks were good and it'd be going into the third period down one, and Joel Quenneville will not be talking to the now not announcer for the Blackhawks, Eddie Olczyk and Pat Foley. They'd always give it to Mike Kitchen because, you know, let's give the assistant coach something to talk about. So I feel like that's the move. Let's get some bench coach love if we're going to be interviewing anything, because the interviews don't matter anyway. So, but anyway, that's Cubs week. Just, you know, talking about headsets getting tossed is the excitement for our week.
Oh boy.
So let's go to the White Sox, see what they have to say about the week.
So this week is split into two very distinct parts. The first two games of the week against Cleveland, Monday and Tuesday, was the bad part of that, kind of what I thought was going to be, you know, free fall into rock bottom after the week we had last week. But in any event, opened up the week with an 8-4 loss to Cleveland. Lance Lynn gave up 8 earned runs and 5 with 5 in the first, which sounds bad, but it was worse because the Sox got it all the way back to 5-4 after Lance spotted the Guardians a 5-run lead. Gave up 3 more, 8-4 final score. Absolutely brutal. Follow that up with a game one loss in the doubleheader on Tuesday of 4-1, where really the offense was the story. Davis Martin was fine. They saw 95 pitches against Shane Bieber, got 3 hits and no walks. And there was also another, as I alluded to earlier, non-first pitch intentional walk to Jose Ramirez by Tony. So, yeah, that was about when we had Ozzy calling him Ricky Renteria with credentials. The postgame show was basically saying they have no heart, they're dead, this, that, or the other, which was wild coming from a Jerry Reinsdorf-owned TV station. And then things changed, which I was not expecting after that start. I think I tweeted something about how much I hate this team, which, you know, I'd like to recant that statement for now, but I'm not going to delete it because I'm a man of morals. But in any event, things started to turn around there. Game two of the doubleheader, 7-0 win. Abreu hit a first-inning homer. Cease gave you 5 2/3 shutout innings. The rest is history. Wednesday was a grinded out 2-1 win where the pitching and bullpen was solid. And then kind of you rode those two wins into Minnesota in a huge series where Minnesota has really just beat them pretty handily this entire year, as had Cleveland. And you finally got that statement win you were really looking for on Thursday. 12-2 win, punctuated by Luis Robert's grand slam, where I don't know if you saw it, but it was to the second deck. They left Sonny Gray in one batter too long. Basically was walking with the bat in his hand, kind of was looking at it, didn't flip it. It was kind of like a little toss as he spits on the ground at Target Field, which was just an awesome slow-mo to watch. But, you know, from there, Friday won a close game where Kopech had to grind it out, but TA and Adam Engel, who came in for a, unfortunately, weirdly, like, ghost injury to Luis Robert, who's been lightheaded for, like, 3 days now and hasn't played. Slightly concerning going into the All-Star break, but in any event, it was a win, so that was cool. Saturday was a tough loss. Lance Lynn struggled again, which was not great. But I don't really want to talk about that because Sunday was an 11-0, another huge win. Offense was the catalyst. Moncada and Vaughn went back-to-back in that one. But again, really the exclamation point on that game was Dylan Cease going 7 with 8 strikeouts. No earned runs again. Getting you out of that series in Minnesota with a 3-1 series win. As it stands at the break, 46-46, perfectly balanced as all things should be. One game back at Cleveland and 3 back of the Twins for first place. So things are looking a lot better than they were 1 week ago today.
A few things. Yeah, I feel like that grand slam, like it had to have made it into a concession stand, how far that thing went.
it looked like it like that way. I mean, if it's set up like guaranteed rate Fields is there, like somebody was getting drilled waiting in line for a pretzel.
You know, he wouldn't have it any other way. And then, you know, as much as you were kind of annoyed that Dylan Cease didn't make the All-Star game, isn't him getting the win on Sunday, dominating performance, and then a couple days off that much better?
I mean, it would still be cool for him. But I mean, I think I wasn't upset at this point. Like on Saturday and Sunday when they were naming replacements and like Liam Hendricks got it, and people were like, why isn't Dylan Cease getting named? It's like, MLB is not going to name somebody as a replacement and then have to name their replacement like literally 20 minutes later because they're pitching that day. So it's what it is. I feel like it might be a little bit more fun just to be pissed about it the rest of the year. So, and then if he wins the Cy Young, being like, oh, well, he won the Cy Young, but wasn't an All-Star. National media hates the White Sox. I think we really run with that as a fan base. So this continues it.
I think Jake Arrieta was not an All-Star when he won the Cy Young, because it was all that second half. So
don't ruin the narrative.
I'm not. I'm saying he could be in good company.
That's true. Hopefully, but, like this year, not where he ends up 6 years after that.
No. We don't talk about that anymore.
No, we do not.
We just like the folklore. And then he mysteriously disappeared, and we don't know what happened.
Never heard of him again. Went to Philadelphia to find himself. Never came back.
Yeah, we just hope he's doing well. So, other news, I guess, obviously the draft has happened. I don't know much about college baseball or high school baseball, which seems more prevalent. I do know that the first two picks were, children of MLB players, which was cool. Matt Holliday's son went first overall. He looks 12 years old. It's terrifying. And then Andrew Jones's son, Drew Jones, went second to the Diamondbacks. Which I couldn't have thought of a worse place for him to go to continue a legacy, but chances are he'll probably get traded. It's Arizona. They always trade away their talent. So
leave it to Tony.
Yeah. Cubs went with a relief pitcher, or I guess a right-handed pitcher out of Oklahoma by the name of Cade Horton. And if you looked at his numbers at a short glance, as Dave Kaplan did, all he stated was, the Cubs drafted a pitcher with a 4.4 ERA. Cubs are so back, with a bunch of laughing emojis. Little did he know about Cade Horton, and this is only me doing my research about 20 minutes before the show, which shows how little research Dave Kaplan did. He came back as like a third baseman. They started pitching him halfway through the year. He had only a handful of starts in the regular season, had like an 8 ERA, and then they pitched him in the playoffs / college World Series tournament, and he absolutely dominated. Highlighted by an 8-inning, 13 strikeout performance against Ole Miss, who I guess is a pretty good baseball team, by the way. So I'm excited about it, just because like it's not your typical player, like pitcher who's, you know, was at LSU and just constantly, you know, struck everybody out all the time. He kind of has an interesting story. And if there's any time to take a flyer on a guy with high upside who just dominated, you know, his last, you know, three or four starts, I guess I'll take it. And then the Sox made an interesting pick too, Pat, if you want to go ahead on that one.
Yeah. So I guess I turned the draft on kind of not even realizing it was happening last night. I, like you, not really a draft guy. Like 162 games is a lot to follow, let alone college and then high school. Like I'm not going to go there personally, but, in any event, I thought it was interesting. I was watching the draft, and the Braves drafted a kid from RB and Riverside Brookfield, for those keeping score at home. And I was like, wow, how neat, a local kid getting drafted. And then what, five picks later, the White Sox take Noah Schultz out of Oswego East, the pride of Aurora, Illinois. And I don't know. I think it's an interesting pick. They haven't taken a first-round high school pitcher since 2001, where they took a dude out of Providence Catholic High School in New Lenox, so Catholic League represent. But – you know, got kid 6'9", throws, I think, high. He can hit high 90s. His slider, I saw some highlight videos, and it looked pretty cool. Has a weird, like, three-quarter-ish arm slot, which is obviously 6'9" with that. They're all saying Randy Johnson is the comp, which, you know, naturally, of course, that's what it's going to be. But I don't know. We talked about this just before we got on, but another example of a White Sox taking, maybe reliever, maybe starter, depending on how the secondary pitches develop. Lefty with a funky delivery in the first round of the draft. But I don't know. I think it's cool. It's kind of weird, baseball draft. Like, we're not going to see this guy now for like 5 years, but I think it was at least a cool pick to pick the local guy.
Yeah, it was very much a Sox pick, right? Like, I feel like if they're going to go high school, they're going to go local. I don't know. I like the pick, too. I like the Chris Sale comp as much as I like the Garrett Crochet comp. Is the Randy Johnson comp, who knows?
I will say, if he's throwing 103 in the playoffs this year, I will – I don't know. That'd be cool. I'd like him to go that route if we're comping a Crochet.
Yeah, no, that'd be cool, obviously. They had his pitching coach on the radio, and he was talking about how he had a 6-inch growth spurt, like between 15 and 16.
It's like Anthony Davis.
Yeah, exactly. Except he didn't put on any weight either.
What do you do as a high school pitching coach? You have this kid coming out there that's throwing like high 90s. It's like, just throw that.
Yeah, just keep doing that, please.
Just because if I'm 17 years old and I'm seeing a 97 mile an hour fastball, like I'm either striking out or walking because I'm not making contact with the ball.
And I'm certainly not leaning into one.
No, I will be standing on the exact outer edge of the batting box.
That was back when like the American League had to pitch their batters or bat their pitchers. Man, I'm really twisting things around today. Bat their pitchers in interleague play, and you saw like Jamie Moyer just standing at the back of the batter's box, just like, just let it happen.
No, I'm not doing this.
Yeah. But anyway, hey, something to think about for the future. I know the Cubs went very pitcher heavy. I think they had like 7 or 8 pitchers in the first 8 rounds. I think took only 1 position player. So kind of the strategy they're going with is pretty interesting. Cubs fans can only look to the future as the team now is god awful. But moving on, obviously, we are Cubs, White Sox, and MLB podcast, so let's talk about the MLB a little bit. We have the All-Star game that I honestly could not care less about, except for if the new rule that was applied like a few days ago, by the way, or if not a few hours ago, was that if the game ends in a tie. Okay. Yeah, so I love that. They're just like on the fly. Like the marketing teams are just like locked in the basement until they come up with a good idea. And they did. If it's tied at the end of the All-Star game, we're not going to extras. We're not going to tire out our All-Stars. What are we going to do? Each manager will pick 3 batters to do a home run derby, which is kind of hockey and I guess soccer penalty shootout style. Each batter gets 3 pitches and the most home runs wins it. I fucking love this.
It's awesome. I mean, that's fun. Awesome. Like they're leaning into the exhibition part of it, which is great because like ultimately that's what it is. You can complain like Albert Pujols doesn't deserve to be there. Clayton Kershaw shouldn't be pitching, but like who cares is my first counterpoint to that. And this home run derby to decide the winner is like really leaning into that, which is the right way to do it.
Honestly, like I wish that like that's more exciting than the actual home run derby, if you ask me.
It would be. Oh yeah. Imagine if that decided home field advantage in the World Series, though.
Home run derby deciding home field advantage, I would enjoy more than the All-Star game deciding home field advantage.
That would be wild.
Because like you'd have managers like in a playoff races nominating their best player, just like, you know, just telling like or just your bopper, right? Like the Dodgers just send Bellinger and just go, we don't care what you do this season. Just go win the home run derby.
Somebody gets Adam Dunn out of retirement.
Yeah. But, Pat, I think you recall when the last time the game actually went into extras.
It was. Well, I don't know if it was the last time, but the most famous one was 2002, early days of Miller Park in Milwaukee, where the AL and the NL famously tied, which led to the transition to the starting in 03 at Comiskey Park or US Cellular, whatever it was then. This time it counts home field advantage because they ran out of players in the All-Star game and had to stop it after 11 innings. So obviously had they had this rule now, we wouldn't have gone through that whole rabbit hole of like 15 years where for some reason, which I once wrote a blog that I liked it because I thought it was kind of cool, that an exhibition game decided who had game 7 at home in the World Series. So yeah, what a change in history that would have been.
Yeah, and if you look at it, like the Cubs in 2016 had the better record, but had to go to Cleveland in game 7 because the National League lost the All-Star game. I thought it was ridiculous. It stopped me from being able to work that game 7 at Wrigley Field as a ball boy. So that rule has impacted my life far too much, let alone someone who actually has to play in the damn game. But we thought it would be fun to act as the managers of the 2002 All-Star game and pick who we think we'd have not as three batters in a home run derby, because quite frankly, the rosters are too stacked, but as we'll pick five, much like a hockey or a soccer shootout. Well, I guess hockey does three, but they eventually work their way to five because it's a lot harder to score in the hockey shootouts. But in any case, so Pat, I guess you will be Joe Torre in this situation.
Okay.
And I will be Bob Brenly, which I guess is not as good as it used to be. But
oh boy.
Yeah, it just got hot in here. I'm just going to read off the starters for the National League. And some of who I think would be interesting off the bench as well. So you have Jose Vidro, Todd Helton, Barry Bonds, Sammy Sosa, Vlad Guerrero, Mike Piazza, Scott Rowland, Jimmy Rollins, and the starting pitcher, Curt Schilling. Now I see why Bob Brenly was managing this team.
Folks.
Then off the bench, you've got, of course, Cub great Damian Miller, Benito Santiago, Richie Sexton, Luis Castillo, Junior Spivey, Mike Lowell, known Cub killer, Jose Hernandez, Adam Dunn, Reds great, Luis Gonzalez, Lance Berkman, Andrew Jones, and Sean Green. So if you want to name off the AL, and then we can go, I guess, back and forth and decide, and what order, because order definitely matters too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, AL, going down the position players, Jorge Posada, catcher, Jason Giambi, not Jeremy, rest in peace, Alfonso Soriano, Shea Hillenbrand, I do not remember that guy, Alex Rodriguez, Manny, Torii Hunter, Ichiro, and then on the bench, we got AJ Pierzynski with the Twins. Wow. Might be my number one pick. Paul Konerko, another one there. Wow. Mike Sweeney, Tony Batista, Robin Ventura on the Yankees, and Nomar. Derek Jeter will not be picked by me. Miguel Tejada, Omar Vizquel, Garrett Anderson, Johnny Damon, Robert Fick. I don't know who that is. And then Randy Winn.
Robert Fick, if you're watching, we're sorry.
Him and pitchers I all recognize. Another 05, Freddie Garcia, but him and like Shea Hillenbrand. I'm like, I have no memory of these guys playing baseball.
I remember the name Shea Hillenbrand. I probably had his card, but I couldn't tell who he played for. But Mike Remlinger made it that year too. Another Cub great, pitcher wise. Anyway, so I guess I'll let you go first because I've got so much more gas to work with here on the National League side, quite frankly.
So we're sticking to our leagues, right? If I understand this correctly.
Yeah.
Okay. I am
actually.
Going
to... Do you want to just do all pick?
Yeah, let's stick to the leagues.
The leagues. Okay. Yeah. It would make sense for the whole tiebreaker purpose of it, I guess.
Yep. So let's see. I'm going to go with my first pick. So this is the first guy hitting. AL would have been away. So this would have been the first guy hitting in the home run derby. I'm going with Ichiro here. He always said like there was, you know, if he wanted to hit 40 home runs, he would have, but he preferred hitting base hits. So I would have liked to put that to the test and see how he does in the home run derby, especially then like, you know, 1 year off of the whatever he hit, like 370 his rookie year, winning the MVP for the like all-time win record Mariners. So Ichiro will lead it off for me.
Interesting. It's so easy for me to say Barry Bonds, but I really would love someone who can actually set the tone energy-wise. Like Bonds got people going because he was just hitting absolute missiles. But Sammy Sosa had the energy that the league needed for so many years. So I'm starting off with Sammy Sosa. And if we're doing serpentine, I will have Barry Bonds batting second.
Okay. I'm going for two. I think the easiest pick for me, especially in 2002, is Jason Giambi. I think that was really one of the heydays of his career. Big power hitter, probably on roids at that time. So he's my guy in the two slot.
All right, and then you got another pick now in the circuit.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I'm going to A-Rod. A-Rod 3. I think, you know, again, heyday of his career, probably on roids. Probably the best player in that lineup, if I had to fashion a guess, in terms of overall, like, quality of player, regardless of what you think about the suspensions. But I think A-Rod's the easy choice there for the three spot.
He's a Ranger at the time, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, he is.
Okay, and a shortstop at that. All right, this is another easy pick for me out of the starting lineup. Vladimir Guerrero, also a great father, so we love that in our lineup. And then I'm going to dig to the bench now. I'm going to pass on Piazza. I'm going to pass on Todd Helton, and I'm going to go with. This is tough, but I'm going to go with Adam Dunn. And the reason I'm going with Adam Dunn is because he's only going to see three pitches, so the chances of swinging and missing on all three are not likely. So I think he'll make good contact, and he only hit home runs. He didn't hit anything else. So that's my third and fourth picks, Vlad Guerrero and then Adam Dunn. And I have one more when it comes back around to me.
So for my fourth pick, I'm going with Manny. I think that's a kind of an obvious one where, like, if I didn't go with Ichiro, probably would have been Manny, but fun player out there, big time power hitter, not really a hard decision there. Honestly, I think, you know, looking at the NL lineup for this year, at least in terms of name recognition, you're probably working with a little bit extra star power than I got. But for my fifth spot, a couple interesting picks here. I'm not going to reveal who I'm picking, but I'm going to go through some of the names that would be in consideration there. Obviously off the bench, a couple guys, Paul Konerko. I think he was in the home run derby that year and won a round or two, did pretty well. Garrett Anderson won the home run derby in 03 at US Cellular Field, and then won MVP of that All-Star game. I don't know how many times that's been done, but it can't be many. Those would probably be the two bigger names off the bench. I'm not going to throw Omar Vizquel there. I guess Miguel Tejada, maybe he could have done it, but the guy I'm picking, I guess, to avoid further suspense, I'm going with Alfonso Soriano. At the time, second baseman of the Yankees, making his first All-Star appearance. A lot of natural power there. I think would have been a fun guy to have in there.
Definitely the heaviest bat. You'd like a guy with a heavy
exactly.
bat.
Exactly. And just all he has to do is get a hold of one or
and you
three,
think,
whatever it is.
I think that me picking Adam Dunn made it easier for you to pick Alfonso Soriano. So I'm going to take partial credit for that great pick. Yeah. And then I'm going to go with Lance Berkman with my last pick, with the caveat that a Cubs starting pitcher has to pitch to him, because he absolutely hit nuclear bombs off Cubs pitching his entire career. So yeah, you may have like these guys bringing out the pitching coach to lob up. No, I want like 2002 Cub relievers coming out there and throwing their best so that Berkman could take at least two of three out of the ballpark. No questions asked. So yeah, that's my lineup. Sosa, Bonds, Guerrero, Dunn, and then of course Lance Berkman. What did they call him? Did they call him the Big Puma or something like that? He had a lot of nicknames.
I just remember calling him these.
Yeah, they called him Fat Elvis, which he really did not appreciate, but I was a big fan of that one as well.
You know what else is interesting about this? There are a lot of future White Sox on this roster.
Yeah. Tiebreaker. Go through that first, by the way.
I was going to say, I'm just going through the list. In the starters, you got Manny, and then you got Jimmy Rollins. Let's see, scroll down here a bit. Obviously, you have Burley. Freddie Garcia, a couple years later. AJ Pierzynski was a Twin at the time. Omar Vizquel, future White Sox there. He was with Cleveland at the time. And then on the NL side,
Paul Konerko.
Well, he was on the team at the time.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Andrew Jones, Adam Dunn. Let's see who else on here. I think there's one or two others. Actually, that might have been it. Not as interesting of a segue as I thought it was going to be, but there's at least a good amount there.
There you go. No, I was going to say tiebreaker. You have to pick one of the pitchers on the roster to get a home run.
Oh, boy. This is tough. I
Now, I have the advantage here because my pitcher's actually hit.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so, I mean, this is just pure guess. I could go with Ugueth Urbina. He really brings the fire out there. But I'm going to go with Mark Burley because he actually hit a home run in a game once. So that is all the logic I have there.
Yeah, I don't know of the hitting abilities of most of these guys. So I guess I'm just going to go with the guy we know was on steroids, and that's Eric Gagne, because I think there's not like pitching steroids and hitting steroids. It's just steroids. So I'm going to go with Eric Gagne on that one for sure. Yeah. So anyway, that was a fun little exercise. Something, you know, we come All-Star break, like there's literally nothing else to talk about. So yeah. Maybe we revisit a crosstown centurion or two, if we so desire. But in any case, that's pretty much it for our episode. Obviously, the Sox had a better week than the Cubs. Pat's going into the All-Star break with, I wouldn't call it a smile, but I'll call it a grateful nod.
About 10 feet from the ledge now, unlike last week.
Yeah, exactly. So Freebird is not playing. He's not in the swan position over traffic, much like Jenny from Forrest Gump.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, man. But in any case, we always end the episode with a question Pat has not heard before. Pat, I had a trouble with this one, but I guess there's a little bit of room for thought here. Because the White Sox now have a 55% chance to make the playoffs, according to you, who will they play in the first round and how will they fare?
Ooh, so that would, I mean, it would be, they're winning the division, so they would get the, how does this work now, the best wild card? I think that's how it works.
They would probably get the best wild card team.
Okay. Also,
there's a couple, yeah, it'd be the best wild card team.
Okay, let me pull up the standings right now just so I can give you an accurate representation here. But right now, current wild card leader would be the Rays. Is that right? Oh, no, it would be the – yeah, it would be the Rays. You know what? I'm going to go with the fun pick. I'm going White Sox. They get the Mariners first round of the playoffs. I think that Sox take that game three. So two out of three, all three at home. I think for a road team to come in and win – two out of three on the road in the first round of the playoffs would be pretty tough. But I'm also with that prediction going to go with the Sox having a worse record than the Mariners. I think that goes without saying at this point, but that would be kind of funny. You finally end the 21-year drought and you face a team with a worse record, all of the games on the road, and then you lose two of them.
Yeah. No, that's what I was thinking was Mariners as well when I asked the question. And the advantage of winning the division and getting all of the games at home. Yep. Leave it to baseball to just think of weird shit like that.
Yeah. It's basically like they took the part of the playoffs from 2020 that people didn't really like that much. And like, but what if we did it again?
And more. No, the two game playoff was 1,000 times worse, right? Wasn't it like best of.
No, it was best of three again.
Best of three. Oh, I thought it was a two game playoff because the Cubs got swept by the Marlins. So there's that.
I would almost rather have had it been like that, like, two game series with run differential, like the soccer style.
I've been pushing for that for a long time.
Could you imagine, like, they go to the second one and like a team's like you lose it by 8 runs the first game and you just got to start like trying to obliterate the ball the entire game?
Tiebreaker, away runs, or home run derby?
Oh, it got to be the home run derby.
Could you imagine though, like to get to the World Series, a home run derby?
That'd be awesome.
That'd be
completely
so awesome.
Outside the spirit of the game, but it would be awesome.
Like, and imagine, I'd only like it if my teams weren't involved, and then I would be losing my fucking mind.
Oh yeah, if your team's not involved in that, it would be the most awesome thing to ever watch. But if the White Sox were in that, I think I would need like a wellness check.
There's another this is a never happen scenario, but you play an inning, but the only way to get people out is to tag them. You can't. Ooh, no force outs.
Or you know, take one from wiffle ball. Pitcher's hand.
The games would be about 45 minutes.
Could you imagine?
If it was pitcher's hand.
They want to improve pace of play. It's right there.
Yeah, well, here's the other thing, too, is that you would have to have a really good fielding pitcher, an athletic. You can't put Lance Lynn out there.
Dallas Keuchel, Gold Glove winner.
Yeah, but he's also a locker room cancer. Oh, we need to talk about
everyone else is the problem.
We need to talk about that for a second.
Yeah, we do.
Before we go, because I know we've ended the show already, but here we are. So how about you just set that up, Pat? Go ahead.
Yeah, so obviously last week we were talking about kind of the White Sox, the rumors that there was clicks, other things forming in the clubhouse. And Nick very astutely posited that he thought Dallas Keuchel was the source of that, because they did say a current player. Players were being told this elsewhere. So then, lo and behold, on the radio this week, Liam Hendricks gets on. I believe it was the Waddle and Sylvie show here in Chicago, and gets asked about it. And he said his base is like, I want to know who the source is and whether or not it was a former player from our team that played on our team this year and is still in the league. And basically would not be surprised if that was the case. They asked him, does this player have a beard? And he said, I cannot say any more than I already have. And yeah, so it seems like that probably unsurprisingly may have been the source of some of this.
Got him again. We got Joe Madden fired. Who else did we get fired?
We got Joe Girardi.
We got Joe Girardi fired. We're calling Dallas Keuchel on.
We did not
bullshit.
Get Charlie Montoyo fired though.
No, we did not. I did not see that coming. But hey, when expectations are high and you have a good ownership group, you fire the manager when they're underperforming. Isn't that right, Pat?
Sometimes you just let them figure it out.
Yeah, let them wear it. Like I
wore Big Tony guys here.
Like I wore, I think it was 20 home runs off of me in wiffle ball with the wind blowing out. We just let the pitcher wear it.
I mean, every now and then you just got to do it. Take one for the team.
Anyway, we'll leave it on that note. Thank you so much for listening, Pat. Thank you so much for joining. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts on Chicago.com. So excited that baseball is in full swing, albeit a little bit more exciting on the south side, but at least we have baseball. We can't forget that. So we will see you next week when there's a little bit more to talk about. Go Cubs, go White Sox, go MLB. And remember, especially on All-Star weekend, Yadier Molina is not a Hall of Famer.
Same old